This episode of The Guild is brought to you by Creative Edge. Creative Edge specializes in getting exposure for independent writers and authors and artists of all type. They specialize in arranging events such as book signings, library or school presentations, or any event related to the arts in general. If you are interested in seeing what Creative Edge can do for you, go into www.creative-edge.services. Hello and welcome back to the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild, the Guild Podcast. My name is Chris Mary Holtman and I am your host. Today we are talking to Christina Rienzi and it's a fun chat about everything between heaven and earth. She's an interesting woman with a lot of background that I think kind of shows in her writing. We talk about conspiracy theories, we talk about knowing the truth, writer's block, everything, and also coaching. So it's a really fun talk, and I think we should get to it right away. I would like to take this time to welcome Christina Rienzi to the Guild Podcast. Welcome, Christina.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. How is it? You're in New Jersey, right?
Yes.
How are things there? I've seen that there's a lot of snow in the States in some places.
Yeah, you know what? We're good. It was 70 yesterday, 60 today. I can't complain. A little rain here and there, but it's, you know, your typical April. It's kind of nice and things are good. They're on the upswing and, you know, people are getting out and doing things. So it's kind of nice getting That's better good. Little by little.
Little by little, the world is opening up again in some places, mm-hmm. at least. Do you feel like you've suffered at all from being locked up.
You know what's so funny? That's a great question. Because as a writer, well, not all writers are introverts, but I am. I consider myself an extroverted introvert, meaning I get my energy. I'm a true introvert in that I get my energy from being alone and recharging. And writing is one of those ways I do that. But I do love to be people. By the way, we're all social, right? We're social beings, humans. So yes, the suffering socially has gotten, I'm done with it. It's been a year now. I had my like excitement of like, oh, I mean, I wasn't happy to be on lockdown, but I was like, this is awesome. I'm home. I can get so much done. And you know, that doesn't happen. But yeah, I definitely think I took it as an opportunity to take some classes and get some stuff done and also try to connect in different ways with people. And I definitely didn't do as much as I wanted, but I feel like I got through, but yeah, it has been hard. It's been a hard year on everyone, I think, for different reasons, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I'm in
I would say that I'm an extrovert introvert as well. Both me and my wife are introverts, but she's definitely a lot more of an introvert than I am. You can't tell that I'm an introvert when I'm around people.
Same.
But it's very exhausting. I don't really think people understand how exhausting it is being around people. So when you get home, you're completely
dead for days. Wiped out. And it's funny, my husband's an extrovert and we always talk about like, well, what does that mean? And I know, like, with my psych backgrounds and having taken every like personality test and everything out there over my careers of psychology and coaching and all this stuff. And I'm an INFJ, which if anyone knows, it's an introverted, intuitive, feeling, judging, like that's what it stands for, Myers-Briggs. But the bottom line is it's like one of the most introverted personalities. However, if you are around me, I am like social butterfly when I'm with you. But you're exactly right, Chris. What happens is my energy meter goes down. And when I'm done being on, whether that's at work or at a book event or whatever, coaching, anything, I am done. I'm down for the count to the point almost where I can't even talk. Like I'm so drained and I need that recharging time alone. So introvert, extrovert, in a very simplest form, comes down to where do you get your energy from? Introverts get it from being alone. Mm-hmm. Extroverts get it from other people. So I drain my energy with other people and then I am recharged alone and in quiet time, whereas an extrovert would be drained in quiet time and recharged around others. So that's the simplest way. But yeah, you're right. It is hard. I don't think anyone can truly say that's an introvert, that's an extrovert, just from talking to you. But it's inside. It's internal in your energy, for sure.
You said that you get your energy from writing, and I think over the years that I've done this podcast, kind of come to like there's a common denominator for creative personalities. There's like this kinetic energy that needs to come out. Otherwise it threatens to rip your entire fabric of reality. And whatever that can be, I mean, and it can be damaging if you don't get to, for me, it can be very damaging if I don't get to write and I don't get to center myself that way. Is that how you feel as well?
I do. And I feel it. It's not, I do fiction and nonfiction, and it could be a blog post. It could be a newsletter. It could be anything, but I have to express myself through writing and it needs to be like deliberate and focused. You know, sending a text message isn't going to do it. And I do feel it. I feel the pull when I have a laundry list of things I want to write, or that I have like my goals, and whether it be a book or whatever, and I get pulled away because of life. I have a lot of angst about that, because it's almost like somebody, like you said, who is an exerciser, or someone who, I mean, everyone should exercise, but I mean, someone who really enjoy, and it becomes part of your lifestyle, or somebody who, whatever your thing is, meditating. Again, I think meditating is great for everybody too, but so is writing in some ways. But whatever your thing is that feeds your soul, that makes you feel connected as a human, if you don't do it, it is damaging. And writers, everybody can write, and some people go through periods where they're like, oh, I'm going to write a little, and then I kind of give it up. It's like when you're a born writer in the sense of like a communicator through language, written language, or writing stories, it's part of who you are, and not doing it, it's almost like you haven't exercised in a week, or you haven't taken care of yourself. It's and especially during the pandemic, I felt it, that it was really important to keep that up. And I didn't do it to the extent that I wanted, but what I did helped. Everything I write, it's like when I'm done, I feel good. Even if it's 5 minutes, it's like, I got my, like, you know, I got my energy back. I got my, like, I'm doing what I was born to do back.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was thinking about this like last night, because my wife works nights now, evening. It's kind of like the pandemic has turned everything on its ear. So my wife, who usually is at home at night, isn't anymore. So, and I realized, like, I have this drive to write all the time, but the process of sitting down to do it can be very difficult to get to that place. You know that you feel good when you do it. You feel a sense of accomplishment. Right now I'm working on a book and I'm really in the zone. And I notice that every time I sit down, all of a sudden, like, if it be it, it's always ends up being at least 1,000 words.
Awesome.
At the
That's
end.
That's the best place to be for a writer, right? Doesn't it feel great?
Yeah. And I don't know. It doesn't even feel like it. It's not, there's no struggle. The struggle is sitting down.
Sure.
Do you feel that as well? And what do you think that is?
Yeah. So I think someone explained it to me this way recently, which I found to be very enlightening. I don't know if there's a book, and I think it's The Artist's Way. And they talk about something called 100 creative horses and how like all your creative horses have to work together to produce something. And that when you diverge, like there is something that happens at work or something with your family, or you have to like pull your mind somewhere else. It's like a couple of horses go off the path. And when your attention is even just a little bit misdirected, it's very hard to pull it back together and focus. And I don't even mean like when you're just to sit down, that's it for me too. Once I'm sitting, I'm good.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not just sitting to do other thing. I'm sitting to do writing.
Yeah.
But yes, I think we forget how it does take energy to make that choice. And once you make that choice, you know, doing it is just, it's opening yourself up to what, and what creative information will come to you and you'll let go, you know, like your fiction story or your nonfiction, whatever you're doing. But yes, it is very easy, at least for me. And I know a lot of writers to get distracted, and everybody says a schedule. Well, I've done the schedule, and the schedule does work, right? Mm. It works at different times in my life. Right now, my schedule is not like every day at 5 a.m. I write, which is what I used to do years ago. And that would work. You got to just give yourself permission and just make it a priority. Like, I'm going to write today, whatever that looks like for you. And you look at your schedule, and before you do anything else, put writing on there. Like, look at everything and go, okay, writing at noon or writing at 5 or writing at 10, like whatever it is. And just commit to sitting in the chair. And if nothing happens, you tried, you know, but I believe a lot of us, it's like, once you sit down, something's going to come to you. But sure, it's you definitely having to forget everything else and put it as a priority is difficult. It's difficult for all of us. But yeah, I mean, I hear the people who, you know, the people I know who have been truly successful have made it a habit and a priority. And I think that, that is important. If it's that important to you, it needs to be a priority in your life, and we can't let those things get in the way. And I, for one, often do.
Yeah. And I think I learned from, he's since passed, but there's an author here in Sweden called Torgny Lindgren, no relation to Astrid Lindgren at all. The one who wrote Pippi Longstocking, although they did live in the same city.
Oh, how funny.
but he told me, and he was a truly successful writer. He became and was in the Swedish Academy, you know, in charge of choosing the Nobel Prize winner in literature. But he said like his ritual was he got up at 5 in the morning. He had his cup of coffee. He sat down in his study. He wrote until 12. The rest of the day was either answering letters or doing research. But the dedicated writing time was somewhere between 6 and 12. And then he didn't actually write anything else during the day. But he had this a lot of, but on the other hand, he was also that was his job.
That's your job. Right. And I think that when it's your only job, your day job, your only job, whatever, the one thing you do, and many of us do many things, right?
Yeah.
The one thing you do. It, absolutely. You can do a 9 to 5 or like he did a 6 to 12 or whatever. And I think the important thing is to hear everybody, what everybody else does, like get it, you know, get feedback. Like, what do you do? How do you do it? Like get all the information and then sit down and go, what can I do? What's good for me? Because within everyone's schedule is a tidbit of information that could be helpful to you. Mm-hmm. There is another writer that I respect very much. And she's a very well-known writer. And she, we had a class with her a few years ago, and she had mentioned like her goal is 250 words a day. That's it. And if you do 250 words a day, you know, you could potentially have a book by the end of the year, you know, if you stick with it. And that's what she does. And maybe she does 1,000, maybe she does 500, but like 250 is the minimum. And some people say I do a page a day, which is around 250, right? So anyway, whatever works for you, or even if you say I do an hour a day, whatever your thing is that can work for you, I think try it. And if it's not working for you, try something else. I found that when I was in like, you're in the zone right now, it's what I call it. When I was in the zone with a story, I literally finished a book within like 3 weeks. It was a novella, but still the whole story completed within 3 weeks to a month. It was a that's crazy for me. You know, I don't, it takes me a while, but I was so in the zone. I would sit down at 5 to 6 in the morning. And there were some days I walked away with 3,500 words. It was like, I don't know what was happening. It was a divine download. I felt like I was just like the conduit. Like I wasn't even thinking. I was just typing.
Yeah.
And that's great, but that doesn't always happen, right? I mean, that's like ideal. When that happened to me, I was like, this is the way it's always going to be. No, that's the way it was for that book. It was not, there were times I struggled for months with stories, but anyway, you have to do what works for you, and only you know the answer to that. But I do think taking information from other successful authors and even authors who found their groove and found their zone and is very important, because you'll find your way. And you are not, your journey is your journey. Nobody has the same journey in life or in writing. So many may look similar, but they're all unique as we are as humans. So I think you've got to just know that you are a unique human with a unique journey, and your writing journey is going to be just like that, unique for you and changeable for you.
That's so true. I just finished a short story that I sent in, and it was only supposed to be, I think it was 9,000 words. And I did complete it, but it took like 3 weeks for me to do it. And then, as I said, the zone story that I'm in now, it's been just a couple of days and I'm already looking at 6,000 words. That's so weird. And that's without actually having any plan and knowing where the story's going. I mean, we talk about noisy stories, and Brian Keene, the horror author, talks about stuff being noisy, and that's the stories that want to be told. Yeah. And we can't do anything about it because it just comes right through us.
Yep. And I recommend this book all the time, Elizabeth Gilbert. I mean, I'm like, I love Big Magic. If you are an artist or creative, a writer, especially, read Big Magic, because it's all about that. It's about the idea that comes to you. And if you don't grab it, it goes to the next person. And that's okay. Some stories we are not ready to tell yet. But the synchronicities in this book about things she's experienced are unbelievable. And it's very funny because I found that to be true for me as well. Like, an idea will come to me. I'll have it, a very detailed idea, and I will start sketching it out. And then some other story will be pulling me. And I always go with what pulls me the most, because if I'm struggling, it's almost like fighting the law of resistance. Like when you fight something, it fights back. Like, you just got to let it flow, let it go. So I got to go, all right, I got to go to this story now. That story comes out, and I swear to you, it could be 6 months, it could be a year later. It's like I see that story, and either it be a television show or it be a book. Not to say that mine would have gone down that road, but I look at it and go, oh my God, that was the exact story, sometimes almost down to details that I'm like, how did that author know? But I believe there's like a pool of ideas out there. And yes, they do come from us, but I feel like we're the conduit for them too. And you just, as a creative, you got to open yourself up to anything being possible, and to be the place that a story comes to be told. And we'll all tell them differently. That is true. But there are some ideas, like if you read Big Magic, she talks about just those ideas that are really very specific, and be it you or somebody else, it will be told. So it's very cool, very interesting, and just a way of thinking about how we're all connected and how we're all kind of collectively sharing, you know, just our energy and information, and that, you know, creatives feed off creatives. So it's like, we got to just support each other, help each other out, and tell the story that we need to tell.
Exactly. Let's look a little bit about your writing. You said you write nonfiction and fiction. What came first, nonfiction or fiction? The chicken or the egg?
That's really funny. So publishing-wise, fiction. I've always been a writer. I call myself, like, I've always been a writer. I feel like fiction came first, only because even as a child, I was writing short stories and, you know, submitting them in school and getting accolades for that. And then as I got older, short stories have really been my first love in fiction. I always loved story. And then when I got into like the world of work, where, you know, I went to school, I got my degree in psychology, my master's in psychology, and then I was working in business and did all these things. I love the language, the writing part of things. So I would write everything from a policy to an announcement. And now I do get to be responsible for communications that are going out to larger groups, nonfiction wise. So I feel like they've both been a part of my life, but in terms of my writing career, fiction has definitely preceded nonfiction. I'm now dabbling in a nonfiction book that I'm hoping will come out by fall about happiness, because I've done some studies in happiness and well-being. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities between the two, believe it or not. And I think when it comes to fiction, anybody who's a fiction writer or a creative knows that story is, life is story. And we always say like, life mimics art or art is life. I mean, there's so many parallels. Yeah. And it is so true. And I realized that retrospect, looking at my nonfiction work going, oh my God, I'm doing the same thing in nonfiction that I did in fiction. Only this is information to help people in real life, you know, move through something, where my in fiction, I'm doing it to my character.
Yeah.
And through my character, I hope and always have hope that my reader will go on that journey too. And so that's sort of like, when I look at it, like I'm doing the same thing. It's coming out in a different form, but that's who I've always been. That, and I've always been that kind of like helper in terms of how can I empower you and inspire you to, you know, have a better life experience, whatever that looks like for you. And I think that is absolutely what I was trying to do through my fiction and in my nonfiction. It's very similar.
Yeah. And nonfiction and fiction is, I mean, they're closer than people think, because for they kind of say, think that they're two sides of like very, like a very long spectrum. When I studied literature at the university, because that's my background, I'm a literary scholar from the beginning. We talked a lot about the actual two different, the sides of fiction and nonfiction. On fiction, the furthest away you can get, that's pornography, because there's like nothing true about it, even right. though it acts like it is sometimes, mm-hmm. there it isn't. It's never true. And then the other side, you have the only real like nonfiction there is a, like how an instruction manual on how to put together a piece mm-hmm. of IKEA furniture.
True.
Because that's the truth. You do it incorrectly.
That makes sense.
So
yeah.
And in between that there's, and that's basically just kind of like one stream of like fiction, really, because this mm-hmm. whole thing of based on a true story has never really been true, because there's never really, it's just always an interpretation of somebody's.
Correct. Yes, you know, it's their interpretation. And story is everywhere. You know, we tell each other stories to get through life. We tell each other stories to entertain, to educate, mm-hmm. to inform, to inspire. Like, so story is what the thread is for me anyway, and where my fiction and nonfiction overlap is a story. And okay. in nonfiction, it's the story we tell ourselves and the story that we think people are telling us about ourselves and how to kind of overcome that. And within fiction, it's the story our characters, we're telling the reader through our characters, and what story is the reader telling themselves when they read it. So it's yeah. all about story. Story is really how our brains process life yeah. through story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's true, we all build, you know, whatever we read. I mean, you're going to read, if we read the same book, we're going to read it differently because we have different life experiences. So it Definitely. Becomes our own story. It makes mm-hmm. me think of James Randi, the famous skeptic who just recently passed away. When he was doing an experiment about astrology. And he went to a university and he gave everyone that he gathered their dates and you know, birth dates and, you know, stuff like that. And he said like, well, okay, and I'll calculate it and I'll come back with a reading for you all, a personal reading. And he gave them all their personal reading and everybody's like, oh, this is so me. This is so me, exactly me. And he just, in the end, he said, well, you all got the same one. It's the exact same paper. It's just, I changed the header. So it's kind of, anyway, what was the first thing that you ever got published and how did that come about?
Yeah, so my first book is Choosing Evil, and it's sequel Breaking Evil. They're They're both part of the trilogy. Well, it's supposed to be a trilogy now, it's a series. But so those, I kind of wrote it as the whole story in mind as one story. And I broke it out into really two parts, but there's a third part I'm still thinking of. And I started that back in 2010. I had a story in my head that I wanted to tell. And I thought, well, how can I transition from short story to novel? And so I started taking classes. I went, joined some writer groups. I did a lot of research. I read books. Like, I'm like, how do I, cause this was not my comfort zone by yeah. any means. And I also hired a professional editor, a well-known in the industry, out in California, who had worked with some big authors. And I'm like, I really want to do a good job. So I started that in 2010. It eventually, through all those processes, got published in 2014. I did a pitch on Twitter. The publisher picked it up. It was crazy. I didn't expect that. But again, who I surrounded myself with at the time were traditionally published authors, and they kind of sent me, either indie was newer, I mean, and probably more evolved than, you know, it was back in 2010-ish when people started doing it really, right? But it was still newer, and I wasn't sure how to navigate that. So all of my friends were really traditionally published authors that basically sent me down that road. And that's the road I went down through Twitter, and it worked out. I was very lucky. I got a publisher. They loved Choosing Evil. They picked up Breaking Evil, and they were willing to do any other books I had. But then I kind of, once I got into that business and I loved it. It was very great. And, you know, it was helpful and educational, and I didn't know any better. So I did that. I did notice that I wanted to try some things on my own and do a little bit of indie stuff. And when I started doing the indie stuff, I liked the sense of control and the decisions I was able to make. And yet I had educated myself enough to know, like, I could obviously can't do it all on my own. I'm writing the story, right? I'm hiring an editor. I'm hiring all this stuff. So there's ups and downs to everything. No perfect path, and everybody's got their own way that they want to do it. But for sure, that was my first experience, and it was very cool. It was very exciting. I couldn't believe that a publisher wanted to publish my story. But mind you, I wrote the story 7 times. Like, this was this wasn't a story I wrote and then sent in. It was like, I wrote it, I rewrote it, and by rewrite, I mean rewrote. And then it was edited and I cleaned it up. And by the 7th, you know, version that was readable, publishable, that's the version that got published. But yeah, had I tried to send the first version out, forget it. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I have to be very honest. I did not know how to take a short story and turn it into a novel. And by the way, books are really great and classes are really great and writer feedback, but you got to do it. You just got to do it. And you need somebody with experience to read it and to help you through. It is still a learning curve. I will always be learning with every story I learn, because that's just who I am as a person, but also I want to do better and better and better and better.
So. Do you feel like you can go back and read your first work and say, like, well, I'm still, I mean, it's my first, I mean, because I can even though, like, my debut novel was published more recently, I can still look back at it. I can look back at it now, being so close to it, and say, like, well, my writing has really evolved since then, and it's not really maybe representative of who I am today.
No, it won't be, because you didn't write it today. And that's what I say to myself. I didn't write this today. I wrote this in 2014, let's say it was published. So absolutely. When I first, Among Us was my latest novel, that became like an audio book through Audible. They picked it up as an education piece. And then they also found me a narrator, and it was a whole big deal. Like, it was a video series on it. It was awesome. Audible kind of, like, I worked with them directly, went to their studios. Like, it was a really cool thing. But the thing with Among Us is I worked on that. It was kind of like my growth piece, where I hired a writing coach. Now, I'm a writer coach, meaning I'm also a person, a life coach, a leadership coach. Yeah. Like, I coach the person, right? I hired a coach for my story. They're two different things. So people get them confused, but I coach the creative human. Yeah. So I got a writer coach, a writing coach. And wow, what a difference. And I also knew the way that it panned out with Among Us, I knew it was going to be audio. And that's why I was indie publishing it. I had it out to agents and publishers, and I kind of stopped that process and went, okay, now I have to indie publish this, because in order for it to come out on Audible the way they want it done, I need to indie publish it. So I edited it with audio in mind. Okay, completely different. Now, to say that I wasn't writing that way before, but I refined it. It's so different from Choosing Evil. Choosing Evil is my first novel. Among Us is my last novel, right? Now they span, maybe 5-6 years of writing. So mm-hmm. absolutely, I would go back and go, I could read you Choosing Evil, but I don't want to do that. And here's why. I like the book the way it is. It's a representation of who I was then. I'm a different writer now, but I like the book and I'm happy with the book. Does it give me do I cringe sometimes when I'm like, oh, I would have done it differently now? Because the more you know, the yeah, more yeah. you grow. But I am also of the mindset, it's okay. I'm going to leave it alone because it is good. And I am happy with it. I wouldn't have written it the same way today, but that's okay. The story would be, I want to leave the story where the story is. And Breaking Evil, the same thing. And with every book, right, you evolve and grow. So it's okay. And I think that's who I was then. And you also have to give permission to writers to grow and learn and change and not feel like you were a failure because you're not as good as you were today. No, you were good. You did as good as you could then. And I'm doing as good as I can today. And I know in the future, I will write better. And I will look back on Among Us and go, what was I thinking? Oh my gosh, I could... It's okay. Like we learning and growing is part of life, and we all need to forgive ourselves for the things we didn't know. And once you know, you do better.
Yeah,
that's how.
I've spoken to a few authors who are looking, who talk about rewriting their debut novel because they're not pleased with it as it is now. But I mean, you have to also think of, but you were pleased with it then. Pleased enough to send it to a publisher who sure. actually picked it up even though it was maybe an indie publisher and did work on it and believed in it enough to push it. So why change it really? I mean, it's not like Stephen King goes back and rewrites Carrie.
No.
And by no means is that a perfect work of fiction.
No. And you know what? I think this goes to coaching. I'm going to pick up my inner critic. We have this inner critic that tells us we're not good. Everyone has it. We're not good enough. We're not smart enough. We're not successful enough. We're not. Okay. It's just there in everybody. Like we don't have to, we could have hours of talk on that, but that is what makes us want to go back and fix and be that perfect. Okay. Now that I know I got to fix. And listen, if that's going to make you sleep at night better, then who am I to tell you not to do it? But I think every book is unique in its own right and had the love and care and joy and excitement that you put into it is there. You look at it with different eyes because you are the creator and now you have more information, but that doesn't mean it was flawed or that it wasn't like its own unique thing. And so I think with new eyes, do a new story. Yeah. I mean, that's my opinion. I can't tell everybody what to do. Everybody's got their own thing. Oh, great. You have more education. You're knowledgeable. You have more experience. Write something else. Let's go. Let's move. Because by the way, the more stories you have to share, the better your readers are going to be happy about that. You know, your reader isn't going to go, oh, good. They rewrote the first book. Let me go back and reread it. Like the intricacies, I will say this because I'm a reader too. Maybe a writer reader is a little different and I do connect dots, but I do think most readers are in it for the story, for the emotion, for the thrill, for the twists and turns. If you're not changing those things, the little intricacies that make you sleep better at night, a reader isn't going to necessarily notice.
No.
Most readers. So you gave the reader the benefit. You wrote the story. You made them happy. It's done. They want another one. So I feel like it's okay to leave your first book baby behind and move on because that has a place in the world. Just the way it is. And it's perfect in its own right, just the way it is. But by all means, if you feel like you're going to sleep better at night, go fix it. Yeah. I've been down that road. And by the way, I don't mean like there's a gaping hole somewhere or somebody noticed something was not giant, big things, or even like, oh my God, I caught a typo. Okay, fine. But to go rewrite the thing that's already out in the world, it's like your people want more from you. Your people want your stories. Keep going with it, you know? Yeah.
That is so true but I can't imagine that if you rewrite your story that somebody's actually going to go back and reread it because they already know the story. And how much can you actually change it without actually completely changing the story in the end being something completely different? So that's interesting. Well, I mean, Among Us, and what is it, can you tell us a little bit of what it's about and your idea behind it?
Sure. So Among Us is a government conspiracy thriller. It takes place in New Jersey. And also in DC, as you can imagine, for government, you know, it's US government conspiracy thriller, but it follows an English professor by day and a controversial alien blogger by night who's questioning things. And she happens to get a hold of a secret government document, which opens up a door for her. And as a result of this document and information, she has a secret government agency after her. So it's kind of like a cat and mouse. She's being hunted. She's out to reveal the truth. The government agency wants to keep things secret. And over the course of the story, there's questioning. I did a lot of thought and questioning on what do people want to know, really? Do they really want to know the truth? Should they know the truth? What if you knew the truth? Would you not want to know it? Like, what do you really want to? So it was an exploration into what ifs. I watch a lot of stuff on TV, Smithsonian Channel and government, different channels, ID and all these things. And I kind of picked a little bit of everything and put together a story that I thought, like, okay, if the Freedom of Information Act, if those documents were really saying what we think they're saying, what if there was this cover up? And what if there was more going on than we were led to believe and that we really want to admit is true? Like, can we handle the truth? So I sort of went down that road and questioned myself, like, what I want to know, am I better off not knowing? And that was kind of the struggle. It was like one party wants everybody to know. Marcy, you know, our the main character, wanted everyone to know the truth. And the government agency says, no, we don't. And for good and bad reasons on both sides. I wanted to explore that and just, you know, scare myself a little bit. And through the fear of the unknown, and I always say embrace the unknown, but through embracing the unknown, hopefully a reader would kind of ride that emotional wave too, you know, ride along with me.
It's an interesting question to pose and thinking of, and just because of that, I can't remember what his name is. I heard it as an audio play on BBC Radio, which is kind of like, takes place in a world where Nazi Germany still like exists, where it didn't lose the war, but it didn't either win the war. It just kind of exists, and they pose the question is like, would you want to know if your government had done something bad, if the Jews weren't exiled, if they were actually killed, would you want to know? Mm-hmm. Would you want to know that, or do you want to, or and would people want to know, or do you have like a moral obligation to reveal that?
Right, of course, and that's the question, right? Yeah. And I think in a bigger scale, these are situations that we put with that question overhanging, right? And it's so interesting to me. But on a bigger scale, I think about like there's so many things that we think we know, but we don't because it's misinformation. Mm-hmm. There are things that we are told but don't believe, right? And then there are things that we just don't know.
Yeah.
And somewhere in there is the truth. And so you never really know what is truly the truth, just like we were getting back to fiction, nonfiction, right? What is truly the truth and what is truly false. And so you come to some belief system in the middle that makes you sleep at night. And so, yeah, it is a really great question because everybody's going to have a different answer. And people have asked me, would you want to know? And I'm like, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Yeah. Do I want to know? Do I want to be a fly on the wall? In some ways I do. And in some ways I don't, because I know, like, my brain wants to know, my curiosity wants to know, but my heart doesn't want to know, because I do feel like completely connected. And once I'm connected emotionally, and then I'm going to carry that.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect me and who I am and how I show up and what I do and my life. And I don't know if I could handle it. I have to be honest. You know, I can watch, I was watching something last night and my husband's like, are you crying? And I'm like, yeah, I'm crying. Like, it's, I feel for people. I know a lot of us do, and I'm not saying that I'm any different, but I do tend to like things that are very violent, or as much as I write about thrillers, things that are in real life, very difficult to handle, I get emotional about. And it's okay to be emotional. That's a human thing. And it means we have compassion and empathy. But something on a scale of like what I wrote about, like aliens, like, do I really want to know? Can I sleep at night? If this was really happening, could I sleep at night? am I just going to have anxiety for the rest of my life being able to go to bed wondering when they're going to land on my front lawn? Like, that's the kind of stuff where I say I have a healthy curiosity, but I also want to protect myself. So I think we all kind of are waver.
Yeah. It's probably the healthy thing to do.
Right.
Wilderness of mirrors, I think, is what the FBI used to call that kind of like information, misinformation, what is true, what is not true. I think that is what they used to refer to it
as. And why? And the motive, and that was what I kind of went into in my story, mm-hmm. like, was the motive, do we say good or bad? Like, is there a motive to protect? Is it motive to control?
Yeah.
What's the motive? And we can debate that for forever, but I think that's kind of it. It's like, are we trying to control people or are we trying to protect people? And I think everybody's got their own idea of what they want. And so it is hard. And I wouldn't envy anybody that has information that they're trying to keep. Or
what would you, if there was one thing of all things that we don't know generally, is there one thing that you would like to know? Like, who killed JFK, stuff like, I mean, is there one thing that you feel like, yeah, that I don't think it would hurt if I knew that?
So it's so funny, like all of the, I mean, the big stuff, of course, is what I believe, but don't know if it's true. Like, I would love to like be able to dip into the afterlife and come back in some like dream or something and someone go, yeah, here it is. This is what it looks like. You're cool. You know, instead of wondering, you know, I believe there's an afterlife, but I would love like, you know, to just be able to, you know, have that like proof. I don't know. I think everybody kind of,
and,
I don't know
if, and if there wasn't one, what would happen then if there wasn't one? If right. you found out
that so that's the other thing. Can I handle that? So that's the thing. That's the big thing. The aliens too. I would love to know, but do I want to know? I don't know what's safe. That's a great question, because I do not know what would be safe to know or not know, because I think whatever you, I think that the bottom line is whatever you believe, when your belief is shattered, it is life-changing. And I almost feel like for me, I want to believe what I believe and like, let it be, because the truth, if it isn't what I believe, is only going to, probably turn me upside down. And I mean this on the big things, you know, but yeah, I can't think of anything. Yeah, of course it would be great to know all of life's mysteries, you know, like JFK and all of that. Of course, that those would be interesting to know, because we wonder about these things. But at the same time, I really think about the big stuff. I've always been like, I think about the universe and what's out there and what happens when you die and all of the stuff that we all wonder about. But yeah, it's true. It's like, do I really want to know?
So you know, you're making me feel bad. You're making me feel bad, because I would probably say like, is Bigfoot real?
Yeah.
Something like
well,
that.
That's true too. Well, here's my, no, it's, don't feel bad. It's safe-ish, because what if, and here's what I've thought, Bigfoot is real, but it's not, it's paranormal. It's an alien. Oh. And now Bigfoot is an alien, and we have aliens, and what else is out there? Like leprechauns, are they paranormal? Like, are they real? Like, yeah, I want to know all that stuff. I think the paranormal, and whatever we want to define as paranormal, totally interests me. Like, is there a Bigfoot? Are there, you know, what's out? Like, what do we have going on besides us? Yeah. Like, I'm really interested in all of that, but I'm also afraid of the answer, believe it or not. As much as I love the paranormal stuff, it scares me. So all of that, yeah, it's like,
I think it would
so
be
I
enough.
Feel like if I'm meant to know it, let me know. If I'm not, I'm good.
I think it's enough for me to know, are Sasquatches, are they real or are they not? Yes or no? And then if it's a yes, fine, I don't really care.
And what is real to you? Is real like a physical, like, yes, animal?
A physical thing. If it's a physical, I mean, have people actually seen what they've seen? If it's been a Bigfoot, was it actually a giant hairy ape-like thing?
And what if it disappeared and it was really a giant hairy ape thing, but it was also paranormal? That's what I think.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Then it opens a can of worms.
Yes. Stop getting into my head.
I'm sorry. So yeah, but yeah, you're right. So answering an easy question, that is right. And that is satisfying. But then you're going to go, okay, it's real. Now what? Open door. It's great to be curious. And yes, I think my philosophy in life is this. I believe anything is possible. I believe I don't know it all, and I'm open to whatever it may be because I don't know. So I like have my belief system, but I'm also like, it might not be that way. But what gets me through the day and helps me sleep at night is knowing that there are some things I will never know and never need, will have access to that information because that wasn't meant for me while I'm on this earth. And that's okay too. And the curiosity like you have about Bigfoot or anything, it keeps us excited and going and questioning. And wouldn't it be boring if we knew it all?
Yeah.
Then what? Now we have nothing to be excited about, wonder about. So.
I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking that Richard Dawkins must live in that kind of world where he's just like, nope, there's nothing. Nope. Yeah. This is like, right? So I don't know.
This is it.
Yeah. And that can't be fun. Before we cut our time, I just need to know, how did this whole Audible thing come about when it comes to Among Us? I mean, because it doesn't feel like it's something that just falls into your lap. What is your secret?
It fell into my lap. Do you want to know the truth? This is the truth. I literally, you're going to laugh because you might think I'm crazy, but I literally don't know. I went to bed the night before, I swear on everything. I went to bed the night before and I like to go to bed with good thoughts. And I thought, this is literally what I said to myself. Cause I was like reading a lot of stuff and I'm like, let me just try and see what happens. I went to bed and I said, what if something really awesome happened? How would I feel if like all of a sudden one of my books kind of like got the attention and like it blew up? Like, how would that feel? What would that look like? I literally went to bed with that thought. I thought nothing of it. I was like, okay, this is just like, I'm practicing some wacky thing and I'm going to go to sleep. And I went to bed and nothing. And then the next day I'm sitting at my desk and the phone rang. And I literally said, when I went to bed, like, what if something just like felt like what you said fell in my lap? Those were the words in my head I used. What if it fell in my lap and I didn't have to work so hard? Cause I'm struggling at this point. I'm working to put this out. I'm doing this. Yeah. Everything's a lot of work. And I'm like, I just don't have the energy for this. I wanted to just work out. Like, what if it just worked out? What if it fell in my lap and I didn't have to do anything? Went to bed, got up the next day, went about my life, forgot I even did that. I'm sitting at my desk and the phone rings and it's Kate Tilton, who is my author assistant. She helps me with everything. Mm-hmm. And she has connections with all different people. And I never asked her to go about my life. And it's like, she helps me with my website. She helps me with publishing books. Like, it's that kind of stuff, right? And she calls and she's like, I have an awesome opportunity for you. And I was like, okay, tell me about it. What do you mean? She had a connection at Audible and they worked together on some project separately. And she's like, they're looking for a New Jersey author who has a book they want to make audio that isn't published. And these are the kind of the criteria. She gave me the laundry list of criteria. And she's like, I think Among Us, because you haven't published it yet, you're submitting it to aid, would be the perfect, and you would be the perfect person and the perfect candidate, whatever. Contact this person and send them your manuscript. And I was like, okay, I have no clue. Literally fell in my lap. I was like, what is going on? I contacted the person, awesome, sweet. You know, everybody there is great. But again, they have to read my book. It might not be right for it. So anyway, I send the manuscript. They loved it. They're like, done. And it literally happened that quick. And then all of a sudden I was scheduled for like a studio. I literally was in Celebrity Studios. I went to Newark. We went into Audible. We filmed. There's a whole like video out there on the internet, on the world. It's on my author page as well on my website, but be in Audible. But it was basically what they were doing was taking Among Us and they were going to have a narrator narrate a portion of it and use it as an educational tool for ACX University, which is their education platform for authors. Yeah. And I got to go to the studio, listen to them read my book. I was on the video. I answered questions. They promoted me. And then the second half of that, which was unexpected, was they went out and found my narrator. And they went out and sourced my narrator. And they got me an amazing narrator who's like he's an Emmy Award winning. Yes. Emmy Award winning writer, director, actor. Who does audiobooks, and he did my books. I mean, it is like, I literally listened to his voice and had chills because it was like, yes, this is the tone, like you just know. And so that happened. And then it went on from there. Like I was an editor select pick on Audible and things just kind of like really but it literally fell in my lap. And I don't know, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if it was like, I put it out to the universe and it came back to me. Like, I don't know if that's actually what happened. All I know is that maybe I had a feeling something was going to happen. And that's why that came to me. I don't know. It was some kind of something I couldn't explain. But all I know is I literally was like, what if, and I believed it, like something awesome happened and it just fell in my lap. And literally the next day it fell in my lap and my mouth was open for about a week. I'm like, what is going on? I couldn't believe it. And I also felt like, where did this come from? Like, and then of course you question, is this the right book? Am I the right person? Like you just kind of start, at least for me, question your inner critic attacks. And it's like, why me? What's the deal? But actually it was a great experience and it worked out and it made me look at audio different. And I really feel like, I have a different viewpoint of audiobooks and I want to do more. I have another audiobook out, Winter Road, which was the book I told you came to me in like 3,500 words every morning for 3 weeks. But really it was, it just made me, I've always loved audiobooks, but it made me appreciate the process. It is a lot of work. But the product for a reader and an author, how awesome, you know, is an audiobook. That's like my favorite.
And it's both Winter Road and Among Us are available at Audible right now.
Right now. So yeah, there's no secret. It's just, I think the secret is believing in yourself that anything is possible. What we're talking about, literally believe it. Like really believe something can fall in your lap and you don't have to struggle to get it. Something can fall right in your lap. Something that will propel you in the direction you need to go, and don't fight it and don't stop it and just be open to it and believe it. Believe that you're worthy and your book is worthy. And I do think that everything you're doing your whole life as a writer is leading up to your success moment of like, that was kind of my like, wow. I mean, my first one was when I got published, but my second was the Audible thing when I felt like, wow, I'm really doing what I need to be, what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, this is a confirmation for me. But everything you do, like I've had people tell me every interaction you've had, every way you show up in the world, every day, everything you write, it's all a culmination that puts you at a certain place. So that's where I say like everyone's journey is unique and it's yours alone.
But I think it is a testament to believing in yourself. And it's like, I think, I can't remember who said it or where I heard it, but it's like the whole thing of, you know, nothing good ever happens to me. Or this is never going to happen. And instead you should change your mindset to, well, why wouldn't it happen?
Why wouldn't it happen?
Why wouldn't it?
Why wouldn't it? We all, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but most writers I talk to have imposter syndrome and they have the inner critic. It's like, I'm not good enough. Why me? I'm as good as everybody says, or I'm not, you know, we don't believe in ourselves and it's very hard. This is where people make, you know, coaches have a whole business built on this, helping you believe in yourself and going through coaching school for a year and being coached. And I worked on myself a lot. I still am not one of those people that's like, yeah, I'm awesome and amazing and the best there ever was. I say I'm a work in progress and I believe in myself and I know I can do a good job. I have to put the work in. But you're right. It's the why not you? Why not you? Why not? I mean, there's so many people you look at and go, oh my God, this one's successful. Why not you? You know, you have something unique and special to offer. You have, your writing is only from you. Nobody else can write like you. You are the only you. Why not you?
Yeah, exactly. Very, very good, very passionate, fiery speech. Christina, it's been great to have you on. We're going to have to wind down, but please tell us, where can people find you if they want to connect with you, maybe get coached? I don't know.
Yeah, anything. And if you need that, I'm here for you. I have a website and it's my name, Christina Rienzi, ChristinaRienzi.com. We'll connect you to everything, my books, my fiction, my coaching, my email, all of my stuff. And I primarily hang out on Instagram, Christina Rienzi, or I do have a Facebook page, but I primarily hang out on Instagram. But feel free, go to my website, check it out. If you sign up for my email list, you get an inspirational, motivational email every other week with some tidbit of information that can help you get through life. And if you are on my email list, you will be the first to get my book that's coming out, hopefully in the fall, but I'm going to try and release it early to my email subscribers, called Be Happy Now. It's a book on happiness, which culminates my studies in psychology, coaching, and happiness, or just wellness studies. And it'll be free to my email subscribers, and you guys will get it first. So if you would like some inspiration of your other week, please sign up for that. Otherwise, you know, shoot me an email, connect on Instagram. However, I'm happy to hear from you.
Very nice. Well, thank you very much. It's been a delight. Great talking to you, and looking forward to seeing what happens in the future. And I think I will take you up on that offer and subscribe to that email list, because we could all use some happiness in our lives. Again, thank you for coming on. It's been a delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're back. I'd like to thank Christina Rienzi for coming on the show and talking to us, and hope to talk to her again sometime. I'd like to thank you all for listening, for tuning in. Please follow us on Spotify. It helps our algorithms. Like the show on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, just give it a like, retweet it, Facebook it out, whatever you might do, just to help us spread the message. Again, I know a lot of you do, and it'd be fun if we just continue. We got a lot of exciting stuff coming up in the future. This is also going to be an video podcast on David Green's YouTube channel as part of the Guild. So look for that, and much more material there. I'd like to thank John Holtman for providing the music, and the crew. Don't forget Creative Edge if you're looking for marketing. Thank you very much, and talk to you next time.